The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Good morning, it's Donna Marie Doherty in for Greg. Today it's Thursday, it's the 9th of July, and we're so very, very nearly near the weekend. This is your show. Make sure that you have your say. You can get us on text, on WhatsApp, on 086 60 25,000, or you can give Caroline and Katie a call on 074 91 25,000 on the matters that matter the most. Matters that matter the most to you. Come in, have your say, and come and chat to me. Well, if we start with the papers, I'm going to have a give the locals a plug here first. So, starting with the Tyrconnell Tribune, there was a letter to the editor in this which very much struck me. So it was written by a 14-year-old. It's an anonymous letter, but it says, "Nicotine products are being shoved in my face. I'm 14 years old and living in Milford, and as long as I can remember, no matter where I go, there's nicotine products shoved in my face, especially vapes or e-cigarettes, to such a degree where I find myself to struggle with addiction. While I personally don't think the packaging of these products particularly affected me, the fact the vape products are put on all the shop fronts on display while tobacco's hidden under the counters is a serious issue, and changing this could very possibly lead to the next generation of teenagers being less susceptible to addiction." And the letter goes on to talk about the banning of flavours, but they think that that doesn't really have much to do with stopping teenagers from vaping, that they're well aware that nicotine's always been a problem with teenagers, but the numbers have tripled since the introduction of vaping products. It goes on to say that the change in the packaging to look like, you know, maybe more like the cigarettes, you know, they're all the same coloured box, might go in ways of helping that. Interesting about the flavours, while I don't know, I understand their point in saying that maybe the flavour isn't why it isn't what's drawn to people to it. But what I can tell you is that the flavours is making it much easier to disguise, especially for younger girls, because I saw on TikTok ages ago, and it was like matching your vape to your body spray. So it was like a dupe of the Victoria's Secrets body spray. So the sweeter ones are not necessarily like the aerosol ones. But essentially, instead of having to try and cover up the smell of cigarettes, this will blend right in. And if somebody smells it, be like, no, this is my Victoria's Secret spray. So let me know what you think on that. Going next to the Donegal News. And thousands are expected as Ross Nowlan hosts its Orange Parade this weekend. A lot of people, surprisingly, aren't aware that Ross Nowlan has such a big event. I think I'm right in saying that it is the biggest in the Republic, at least. So thousands of people are expected to descend on Ross Nowlan this weekend for one of the most picturesque events on the Orange Order calendar, and with glorious weather forecast for the occasion, which is absolutely true. It's going to be brilliant weather for it. Rolling from the hills of County Donegal and the Atlantic coastline provide the backdrop to what most people believe the scenic setting for any 12th parade in the country. So it's happening on Saturday, which is the 11th, and it's 2 days ahead of the main parades in the north. And they're expecting upwards of 50 lodges, and that'll be from Donegal, Cavan, Leitrim and Monaghan. And then there also will be visitors from the north as well travelling to the event in Ross Nowlan, especially if the bigger parades are on Sunday in Northern Ireland. Making a weekend of it. I'm sure most people will be doing that. It's starting at 12:30 from St John's Parish, and proceedings begin at 3:00, and the return parade sets off at 4:45. So if you'd be interested in going to that, that is on. But I'm also very aware with the good weather, a lot of people will want to go to the beach. And Ross Nowlan, of course, is very popular, but I expect the traffic there is going to be very incredibly busy. So good to know either way. Going now to the Dairy News. John Hume Prize is to be established this year, the Taoiseach says. So it's a new annual prize to honour the Good Friday Agreement. Architect John Hume is going to be set up this year, and this, of course, coincides with Ireland taking over the EU presidency. It's going to be given to a European who's contributed to the values which Mr Hume advocated for to further the development of the EU. Micheál Martin made the announcement during a speech at the European Parliament in Strasbourg about the priorities for the Irish presidency, and this was, of course, in it. He talked about John Hume, said he was a visionary and an immensely practical man, and he saw obstacles, but he also saw how to overcome them and move them out of the way, and this is very much to honour his legacy. And it is, the teacher commented, that it's coming at a time when many in Europe and around the world are seeking to divide people and demonise anyone perceived to be different, which, of course, John Hume was not about at all. So that'll be nice. It'll be a lovely honour for his family as well to see somebody that they loved honoured in such a way. And, of course, many people here will have will remember John Hume, will have met him. It's nice, so it is. Going now on to the Nationals, this is the Irish Times, and it's concerns that's raised about the artists, the artist basic income scheme. So people who are artists, of course, we all know the term of the starving artist or the struggling artist. It's a scheme that would see them receive €325 per week, and it's set to start this year and run until 2029. And there's been more than 10,000 applications. But the issue in lies with the fact that there is concerns that their PPS numbers will be made public. Of course, they will need to submit their PPS numbers, as you do if you're doing anything to do with revenue or getting benefits. So the government officials have conceded the move to poses a possible privacy risk, but says efforts to mitigate it are continuing. So it would see the PPS numbers published. It's like, from what I can gather, it's going to be like buried deep on a website somewhere, but you can get it if you want. So it's the EU State Aid Regulator Register. And that list is online. I would like to think that the names won't be attached to the PPS numbers, but regardless, if it was me, I would not want my PPS number there for everyone. And I think it's pretty well established at this point that I am quite involved in the arts and I have a lot of time and I think that they should be supported. And I was involved in a project and we were just talking about that income scheme for artists. And it seems that there's a lot of people who thought they'd be eligible for it that aren't. And I think that might be something to watch down the line. The people I were talking to were theatre technicians. They work in lights mostly. And it seemed to be more of a logistical job, as in that they, again, as a testament to how skilled they are, because I actually can't really explain what they do, but it seemed more as a, you flick a switch and you're hooking wires up so that it goes, and the creative side of that's being lost, because I'm telling you, you'll know whenever you go to see a show that doesn't have great lighting, because it won't be very good. Okay, moving on now to the Irish Independent, and the Dublin race rape crisis has called out or condemned the fact that an American diplomat has visited Conor McGregor's pub. We all know Conor McGregor has been convicted of civil rape, but a US ambassador, Edward Walsh, is in Dublin and he visited Conor McGregor's pub. They think it's the second time he's been there, but the time before he wasn't in the position that he's in now. And they're saying that he was dressed casually, he was welcomed by the pub manager, and there was a red carpet laid out. I don't think Americans, that's a massive generalisation, but in America, there doesn't seem to be much of an issue with Conor McGregor. We've seen he was on with Jimmy Fallon whenever he was over there, and this is all after the case. And I know there can be room for, well, you know, it's all alleged, but that was before he was convicted. Like, at the moment, he's now convicted. So the Dublin rape crisis supported Nikita Hand, who won over €250,000 in damages from a civil jury after it found that he had raped her in a Dublin hotel in 2019. So they're coming out and saying that, you know, whenever you're over and you're over in a position that is political, you shouldn't be going to places like that. And that is their opinion. But maybe it's not yours. Okay, we're going now to the Irish Daily Mail. Of interest to people here, I think. So retailers are worried that there's going to be an exodus of shoppers as the North's deposit scheme is getting underway. So the return scheme, I don't think it's called the return scheme in Northern Ireland, but it's going to be up and running very shortly. And people are saying that there's going to be a higher rate of return there, and that people are going to bring essentially their bottles from here and put them over there. But it has been confirmed that there's barcodes are going to be per area. So if you try to return a bottle that you bought in Lifford, you're not going to be able to return it in Strabane. People are concerned about this, or retailers are concerned about this. I would have thought the concern, and the concern was whenever this scheme came up, that people just went and bought their juice in the north anyway, so that they didn't have to pay any scheme. But no, it has been confirmed that there is a country-specific barcodes could only be redeemed in the one jurisdiction, so it could mitigate the amount of movement across the border. Again, the way things are going, people are going to go where they can get it for the least amount of money. And I think that's, you know, I think it would be naive to assume in any way otherwise. It will be interesting, though, to see what way that it does play out. In the Irish Farmers Journal, Donegal CPO set to sweep up over 1,400 acres of land. Now, I believe that our newsroom had covered this during the week, in case you missed it. The construction of a 63-kilometre stretch of road will impact 475 property owners, involving the compulsory purchase order of 1,470 acres of land by Donegal County Council with the TIA. So they're on about the 10T project, and essentially to build the road's going to have to go somewhere, and that is through people's land. So the Donegal IFA chair, Joe Sini, is saying that the impact of the road on farmers will be significant, and that the IFA Association is meeting with Letterkenny on the 10T road scheme to help and support the affected landowners. They're saying that if your land is impacted and you're going to have to sell it, if there's a CPO on it, that they will have to be properly compensated. There'll have to be a clear way for them to compensate for their land, and as well as an additional goodwill payment of €6,500 per acre. So if that affects you, I'm sure you're already aware of it. In the event that you are not aware of it, if you go to the IFA, the Irish Farmers Association, I'm pretty sure there's a Donegal page specifically on Facebook, you will be very quick to get in touch with somebody and they will be able to help you out on that. The Irish Sun, and this is nearly, is so sad to say, but a tale as old as time. And there's a photo of a gorgeous little boy. And beside that photo says, "We need money for our Oscar's care, not for a holiday." And it's about families who have to provide 24/7 care for a family member. So they say that they're the backbone of Ireland's health system, working 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to look after our most vulnerable citizens, which is entirely fair enough, in my opinion. There's over 500,000 family carers, and many of them are at breaking point. This is from Family Carers Ireland, and saying that their budget 2027 submission, that there is a crisis and it can no longer be ignored. 71% of the carers are struggling to make ends meet. Three quarters have never received respite. And it's like anything, it's like if you leave a tap to drip on a stone in the one place for years and years and years, it will eventually wear a hole in the stone, even though each little drip might not be a tsunami, but it will chip away at you, so it will. And people need support, and this is what our government is meant to be there for. So this is what Irish Family Carers Ireland is calling for. They're looking for an increase in the weekly carers allowance to €325 to help families cope with the soaring cost of care. And the claims in here is that successive governments has treated carers as a free safety net. And they are taking pressure off of the HSE. There's no doubt about it. We've had many conversations here. Greg has had many conversations of people in Donegal who are affected by this. Going now to the Irish Daily Mirror, and it is looking at Donald Trump, and he has declared the ceasefire with Iran as over. Donald Trump yesterday declared the ceasefire with Iran over in an astonishing tirade where he threatened Tehran and branded its leadership as scum, which has been running in the news this morning. There was US strikes on Keshem, Ireland, and a key port of Bandar Abbas, where people have been injured by shrapnel, according to Iranian media reports. My concern with this, and this is so incredibly selfish, I'm like, is this going to put the price of oil up again? And then in the case of that, I'm sure that people heard this and thought the same thing as me and are going to start to panic buy oil, which will push the price up. Piers Doherty was speaking in the Dáil about it, that everything is, as much as possible has to be done to try and keep that from happening. President Trump said that Iran launched a couple of drones and one missile at ships because they were in the strait, which they have every right to be. And so we hit them very hard last night and we'll probably hit them again tonight. I'll give them a little warning, which I just, that he has so much power. I think whenever you hear people in that level of power speaking so blatantly, it scares me, to be totally honest with you. He also, in the media clip that he had given, he had referenced that their leadership, they had leaders, then they were gone. They had more leaders and then they were gone. We're talking about the Iranian leaders who were killed. And then he goes, maybe I'll be gone because they'll also try to get me. So I don't know. It just seems very, my opinion, tit for tat on what is much bigger than it shouldn't be a case of tic-tac-toe. Okay, finally, looking at the Irish Daily Star, and this is on the front page, and it was referenced in all of the papers, and it is the race to find Jamie suspect. So Gardaí believe an asylum seeker is fleeing the country. And it is, of course, in relation to 43-year-old Jamie Cairn, who was found dead in her home in Killarney in County Kerry. She is American. So Gardaí were in a race against time last night to snare the suspect for the murder of Jamie Carney before he flees Ireland. Their sources saying that detectives are probing the killing of the mum of one, and they believe the suspect is still on the island of Ireland, but he's trying to escape. It's understood, this is reported by The Sun, that he's a Middle Eastern asylum seeker, which will likely to try to get into Turkey, where he spent several years living after leaving his home country in a bid to evade questioning over the shocking murder in County Kerry. I feel that it's actually nearly syncs up that with every time I'm filling in for Craig, I am talking about a woman that has been killed. Obviously, those two items are not correlated, but I think it just shows how frequently we're talking about young, well, it doesn't matter if they're young, but women being killed in horrific ways. She's the mother of a 13-year-old girl beaten to death in her bedroom of the house on late Monday or in the early hours of Tuesday, and lay dead for more than 12 hours before she was discovered. I mean, that's just chilling. But what the point is being made is that there was plenty of time for the suspect to get as far away as possible from Killarney before Gardaí that even knew that Mrs. Carney, who'd lived in the town for at least 5 years, was dead. So that is where things are at the moment. I am sure this will be a story that will continue to develop. There's a quote in here just from Teresa Collins, who's a people from People Before Profit, saying that 8 women have now been killed in Ireland this year. I don't think that includes Northern Ireland, where it has the highest rate of femicide in Europe, and for how small Northern Ireland is quite alarming. So if you have any thoughts, I'm just saying here good morning to Audrey Nellis and to Dolores Dunleavy. They're messaging on the stream there. So if you want to watch, don't forget you can get us on YouTube, X and Facebook. You can also put us on your smart television as well if you are that way inclined. And yes, get in touch. Any of those topics that we had covered in the papers that you want to have a say on, be sure to get in touch with us more after these. It is 25 past nine. I am joined by Debbie Mullen, the chairperson of the Road Victim Support in Northern Ireland, and Donegal. Debbie, good morning to you. There has been a statement released, and it is correlating that the rise in road deaths with the rise in population, which in one hand makes sense, but is that a generalisation that's, I suppose, maybe at fear of sweeping over other issues?
I think that would be a fear of sweeping over the factors that leads to road traffic collisions, which is the behaviours of all our road users. You know, we know now factually why most of our road traffic collisions occur, and we have to hold our hands up. And it is, you know, our behaviours of all of us who are using the roads, whether we are a pedestrian or a driver of a vehicle, we have to take personal responsibility when we are there. So yes, where there is higher population, and that would mean more road users, we also have to look at the behaviour of our road users.
Now, it was the RSA that had said this. Is that, I suppose, maybe a nearly trying to, I suppose, take the heat off of themselves? They are under an awful lot of criticism at the moment. You know, we've seen that 93 people have died on the road so far this year, and that's just up until today, which is 10 from this time last year.
Well, you know, I can't speak for the RSA at all. All I can say is that as many of us within the road safety campaigning is trying to do is we're trying to raise more awareness on, you know, rather than pointing the blame of fingers of responsibility, it's about saying, well, right, what can we do? And we see that road safety awareness and education has to be something that we have to keep putting out there over and over and over. And through ourselves in Road Victim Support Northern Ireland, Donegal, we do an awful lot of road safety, especially within Donegal, within the schools, with our new drivers. Mm. It's a programme called Drive to Arrive, and it really is trying to give them the hard, cold facts from our families who are willing to share their lived experience of what has happened and what could have been preventable for the loss of their young person's life.
That is, you know, it's important that we are doing that, but it's interesting that you emphasise how much effort Donegal's making, because we are in the top four of the fatalities for this year, which is so unfortunate to have to say.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, education is not something that's people are going to get a grasp overnight. You know, we all become complacent as road users. you know, when we ask, you know, in our groups when we're running these workshops, like how many people have driven without putting on their seatbelt. You know, we have to hold our hands up because at one time we probably did too. How many people have sped? We have to say, yes, have we always stayed under the speed limit? And we have to put our hands up. But it's about being aware that you have to take responsibility, that you may have been breaking the law, but maybe you could be changing that now and keeping you and other people safer on the roads.
And there's a confidence that you need to have with that, that if you do look at your own driving habits and maybe see those driving habits reflected in other people. I'm thinking maybe more parents now that are teaching their young people to drive. You have to be vocal about it, because it's, you know, you'd far rather offend somebody than have missed the opportunity to say it.
Totally. And, you know, part of our programme is, you know, for us putting out there to our young people is find your voice. If you are in a car and you see somebody who is maybe texting while they're driving, or they're being distracted, or they're under the influence of alcohol and drugs, or they are driving too fast, find your voice.
Oh, we're having a bit of technical. Debbie, I don't know if you can hear us anymore. Okay, I think we've lost Debbie there. I'll have a little look over here of what Debbie was saying. Bear with me one wee moment. We're having a bit of an issue there. So Debbie is speaking in relation to the number of road deaths, and I think the point that she was going to make there for young people, if they see someone who is driving in a way that they should not be, to ensure that they have the confidence and that they're empowered enough to feel like they can say something in maybe a more layman's terms, maybe without getting at. So if you have a young person in your car and they're pointing something out to you that you know you shouldn't be doing, to put your hands up and accept the fact that perhaps you should not have done that. Almost half of the road users that were killed this year were vulnerable. So that means like they were pedestrians or cyclists, motorcyclists and e-scooters users, which was... e-scooters users are becoming much more, you're hearing it more and more because there's more and more collisions happening with them. You know what, I think I'll take I'll maybe just take a break and I'll come back in 2 moments, 1 wee second. Debbie, I believe the point that you were making essentially was if a young person wants to call out bad behaviour that they see, that they shouldn't be punished for it and it should be embraced.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Another point that was made is that almost half of the people who were killed on the road were vulnerable users. And looking there, e-scooter users in particular, this is becoming more of a prevalent issue.
Yeah, we have that, you know, right across Northern Ireland and in Donegal, of course, you know. And I think, again, if there was more, probably personally, I think if there was more road safety awareness around that, while they may be illegal in the north, I'm not so sure what it is with yourself, but At the same time, we have to educate those who are using them how to use them in a respectful manner and how to keep themselves and others safe while they are doing so. But in the north of Ireland, they are illegal. So therefore, that education has not been rolled out at the moment. And yet, you know, how many hundreds of thousands of people are actually using them on our roads?
Yes, I believe here in the Republic, it is that they can be used, but under very tight jurisdiction, you know, not on footpaths. There should be helmets. There should be roadworthy condition legs. But with an awful lot of the time with these scooters, they're being given to people who are far too young to be driving them. And they end up in dangerous positions.
Yeah, and this can be very hard and very difficult for those, you know, trying to, again, go out there and educate people about that. You know, at the end of the day, I can see where the benefits for young people to use them, maybe going to and from school and stuff like that, but they have to be of an age that they can use them respectfully and appropriately, and as you said, within the guidelines that are put out there.
Yeah, I think nearly a good litmus test is if would you feel comfortable if your child was to start to learn how to drive a car. Yeah. I know that some people say that might be a bit overbearing, but you know, at the end of the day, your safety has to be priority. The 3/4 of those who died were men, young men or boys. That's a nearly like a recurring statistic in relation to road traffic collisions, that there is more men involved in them.
Yeah, unfortunately, we were seeing that right across the board statistically, that young men up to the age of 24 are in a more vulnerable position when they get behind the wheel of a car or indeed a cycle or a motorcycle. We look at the behaviours of why that is happening. And again, you know, there's a lot to do with peer pressure when you're in a car and when you're driving and how you're driving and the style that you're driving. And I know here in Northern Ireland, there is new legislation coming in from the 1st of October regarding young drivers and how long they're going to have to learn to drive before they can actually pass their driving test, where I guess it's very different in the Republic. You know, you can get, you know, your provisional driving license and you can drive. And, you know, I suppose maybe it's about being mindful of, you know, how much learning have you done before you get behind that wheel of a car? You know, because let's be honest, we all think that we are the best drivers until, unfortunately, something happens.
Until you learn very quickly that you are not. Or that maybe the person in front of you or behind you is not. Debbie, thank you so much for your time on this morning. We really, really appreciate what we do. And even despite the technical hitch, I think we got around it pretty well. So look, have a lovely day there. And that is Debbie Mullins. So it is. So we are going to move on now, and we're going to have a chat with Councillor Declan Meehan. Bear with me 2 moments. Declan, can you hear me okay?
I can, yeah.
Yes, excellent. I was almost speaking to you there just a wee bit before I had anticipated. Declan, we're having a talk today about the housing numbers and waiting for this. Now, is this specifically in relation to social housing? Is it affordable housing in general? What are we looking at this morning?
All those figures relate to social housing projects led by the County Council across the county. So from our housing SPC committee meeting, which was held earlier this week, we were provided figures that show that there's 3,260 families and individuals on the current housing waiting list. And 1,272 of those are in the Letterkenny Milford Municipal District. And we have 656 units either on site or under construction. So that represents about 20% of the need across Donegal. So obviously what that shows is that we need to ramp this up, and the County Council are trying to work on that. Some of the issues that I had raised in relation to this was the need for affordable housing schemes across the county, particularly and not just limited to the bigger towns, but also in Gaeltacht areas in particular, where we know that people being priced out of the housing market is an extremely problematic issue for people who've grown up there but can't afford to either build or buy there. So I think affordable housing schemes in Gaeltacht communities are really important. I also think that we need to push more smaller schemes in smaller communities, because an awful lot of the housing schemes that we're seeing being planned or that are on site by the county council are in some of the larger towns. But it's very important that the county council supports the sustainability of smaller communities, because we have seen over the past number of years the closure of post offices, primary schools, and the reduction of services in small rural communities. So the council needs to play a part in bringing more housing into those smaller communities as well.
It is now. There was a lot in that. I suppose I just want to go back to the Gaeltacht housing in particular. There's a double threat here of people want to, and this is this can be said for all rural, all small rural towns and villages. People want to stay near home where they can. But if you have fluent native Irish speakers moving out of the Gaeltacht, there becomes a risk there of the Gaeltacht losing its status and tradition and heritage, I suppose, which is the big fear there.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the crux of the issue. And we've seen pieces of research, and we know from speaking to people in Gaeltacht communities that that is a huge issue. And the council need to do whatever they can in order to protect our Gaeltacht communities. And, you know, the housing need doesn't stop at the boundary of larger towns. The housing need is universal across all our communities. And that's what I'm pushing for the council to recognise. We do see some smaller schemes being progressed, such as a 5-unit development in Rathmullen, which is really welcome. Those are the kind of smaller projects that we need to see more of as well across the county. But particularly that idea of affordable housing. So since affordable housing has been kind of introduced a number of housing programs ago, not one affordable house has been built in recent years in County Donegal. And those kind of schemes are really important in order to help people to get onto the property ladder and to get a roof over their head. So we need to see that being deployed more, and thinking outside the box and how that can be done across County Donegal.
There is a lot of derelict housing in Donegal, and we're seeing the schemes that are in place to try and help people get on the property ladder that way. But for an awful lot of these cases, you have to have the money up front to do it. And I could say I'm speaking from experience here, because I am one of them. We talk about young people who are trying to find a house to buy. I'm in that market. My friends are in it. And a lot of the time we're sitting, chatting, looking, and we're like, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, and look, that is an issue with the having to have the finance up front in order to be able to draw down then either your 50,000 or €70,000 grant for the derelict or vacant properties grant. But it is an excellent scheme. It's one of, I think, the very few successful programs from this government in relation to housing, because it is tackling vacancy while also giving people the opportunity to do up homes that are vacant and giving them a hand to do that. What my concern is, and I have raised this before, is Simon Harris has proposed a derelict and vacant properties tax, a new one to come into effect on the 1st of January 2027. And what we've seen from his proposals is that that will only apply initially to towns with populations over 4,000 and then to towns with populations over 2,000. But again, housing need does not stop at the boundary of larger towns, and nor do the issues of vacancy and dereliction. If that proposal goes forward as planned, under the tanist to Simon Harris's proposals, like not one town or village in the Milford electoral area, for example, will be affected by it. And vacancy and dereliction, as it is across the whole county and as across the whole country, is as much of an issue in the rural Milford electoral area as much as it is
Well,
in the larger towns and cities across the country.
Council, we actually have a question in here on that. A listener's asking, what are you doing or anything about the 17 vacant houses in Milford? They've been lying empty since before COVID. Are these ones that you're aware of?
Yeah, look, I'm glad to have the opportunity to talk. Glad to have the opportunity to talk about that, because we got some good news during the week in relation to additional housing in Milford. So last month we had final approval for 12 units, 1 and 2 bed apartments, in Roscarrow in Milford. We all also this week got notification of final approval from the department for 36 houses above Lochfern Heights in Milford, which is brilliant investment into the town of Milford. But undoubtedly, the 17 houses at Lochfern Heights still remain an issue. Now, I have been working on that since my election and continue to do so. And I've been speaking to all stakeholders involved in this. But I am hopeful that we will get something over the line so that those houses, because quite frankly, it is a disgrace that they're lying vacant in the midst of a housing crisis, that they will get over the line with the support of an approved housing body. So that work is continuing at department level.
Is there any, it might be too soon to ask if there would be a timeline on that or...
Unfortunately, I can't give a timeline on that. I'd love to be able to, but no, not at this stage. You know, there have been a number of false dawns on those 17 houses. And as I say, I'm continuing to work on that as much as possible to ensure that people from the waiting lists in the local area are in those houses as soon as possible.
Okay, Councillor Declan Mahan, thank you for that. I think we're kind of coming in and out. They're just on the line, so we'll leave it there. But thank you very much for your time this morning. That's Councillor Declan Mahan. We had a conversation there with Councillor Declan Mahan in relation to housing demand and need in the county. And in Donegal, you cannot have that conversation without talking about the defective concrete block scheme and the lack of one for social housing. A lot of the council's housing stock is affected by crumbling concrete. And I had a chat this morning with Donal Walker, who's the Assistant Senior Engineer of Housing Capital with Donegal County Council. And it was in relation to that the council are seeking contract tenders for carrying out repairs to a number of houses in Inishowen. There is currently 2,004 houses identified with defective blocks in the county. And 26 of them, they're starting partial remediation works, but it's coming out of the council's pocket because there's no scheme in place just yet. So here is the conversation I had with Donal this morning. Donal, good morning and thank you for joining us here. Now, we're talking about houses in Buncrana that have defective concrete, but these ones are specifically social housing. And the council is taking it upon themselves to do some work on them. What's happening? Because this will, I suppose, pique a lot of ears whenever they hear it.
Hi, Donna Marie. Thanks for having me on. Yes, we are proposing to do some works in houses in Buncrana, and I suppose we've previously done it in other towns as well, in other estates. And it is what we're referring to as essential immediate repairs. It's works to the houses basically to keep the tenants in situ until we have a nationally funded scheme from the department for social housing. At this stage, you know, the houses are being repaired at various levels. Some are just getting crack filling and painting. Some are having minor repairs, corners removed, maybe parts of gables replaced and then re-rendered and repainted again. So again, it is, repair works just initially to keep our tenants in our homes until such time as we have a scheme. Other houses in some of those estates have gone too far, and we're looking at other arrangements for those tenants, i.e. trying to get alternative accommodation.
People will hear this and they'll think that it could be a waste of council funds whenever they may say it's essentially putting a band-aid on a gaping wound.
Well, I suppose the band-aid on the gaping wound is probably a fair enough way of describing it. It is interim measures to hold these houses for in the short term for maybe 2, 3, 4, even 4 or 5 years. But I suppose we have a duty of care to our tenants, and we have a duty of care to maintain the property that they're in a reasonable state that doesn't get into a state of disrepair. There's that argument. Now, what we would also say, Donna Marie, is that we fully intend to recoup this from the department. This work has been done because I suppose there isn't a scheme at the moment for social housing. If there had been a scheme a number of years ago, we probably wouldn't be doing what we're doing now. But at the same time, I suppose we've been working very hard with the department. Our members have been working very hard. Our office members to try and get a scheme that's fit for purpose, and we just don't have that yet. And I suppose there's a sense of frustration there. Our members are frustrated, The officials are frustrated, the staff in the area offices that are dealing with the people maybe that are phoning in, you know, maybe unhappy with particular issues within the houses that they're living. So we have to try and deal with that. And the only way to do that in the absence of a scheme is to repair some of the houses and then look for alternative accommodation for others. But on the understanding that we fully intend to claim this from the department when the scheme is announced.
And is there an estimate cost for these repairs yet?
As I said, there are varying levels of repairs. So some houses are only getting crack filling and painting. Others are getting small repairs. So it varies, you know, and until we have the contractor's prices in, we won't have firmed up costs. Okay. But we'll absolutely share that with the members once we know exactly what it is going to cost. But like, it's not massively excessive. You know, it's reasonable to do. To keep our tenants in our homes and have them living in homes that are in a reasonable state.
What conditions are people living in at the moment?
It varies, and again, you know, some of our properties, and we've given estimates to yourselves and all the media. You know, we have about 1,000 properties that are showing signs of containing DCV defective concrete blocks. We have a lot of other properties that are showing no signs at all, but they're in estates with houses that are damaged. So we're kind of estimating that figure is what our estimate would be. But you know, some houses are showing, you know, signs outside that are not having an impact on the tenants living inside. Some are depending on the insulation type. Does have an impact on the interior of the property. So it varies across the 1,000 houses that we have damaged. It varies. And again, we're trying to manage that for our tenants to make sure they're as comfortable as possible.
The tenants that their houses have gone too far and they're seeking alternative accommodation, is it known what that accommodation looks like at the moment?
At the moment, I suppose we have competing factors when it comes to new houses that are coming online. Like we have people that are on our housing list for a long period of time. And they have to be absolutely accommodated, and that's very important to us as well. We have a significant housing list. And then we're trying to balance that with looking at the properties that we currently own that we have tenanted and looking at the worst of those that we do need to move people out of, because it's not reasonable to keep them there. But like, we will be looking at our shift program, looking at what houses become available. It would be difficult now at this stage to say exactly where tenants are going. Like we would be looking to move tenants very close to where they currently reside, and that's the plan. But again, Donna Marie, until we have a scheme from the department and we see the details of that scheme, it's going to be very difficult. But in the end, we would expect to have that scheme as soon as possible, but I'm always wary of giving timelines, because I think I've used the term imminent in the past, and the department have used it, and that has come back to bite us. So at the minute, we wouldn't give exact details of where we're moving people, but there'll be consultation. Our tenant liaison officers and our area staff will be working closely with our tenants to agree the terms of anyone that has to move, of when they're moving, and any assistance that they require.
Yeah, the term imminent is sitting in the council DCB meetings with the newsroom. We've heard the, I suppose, frustration around that word being used, and then it seeming to not be delivered. And there's an air of sympathy on all counts, because it seems like everybody's losing, in the sense with yourselves having to be answerable to the public and to elected members. It ends up feeling like a lot of the time that the council's hands are tied when it comes to the defective concrete.
Well, I suppose with regard to social homes and the council's social homes that I only deal with, we are constrained, or absolutely constrained, in that we're dependent on the department to make funds available for us to remediate our council stock, and that is right. They're assets of the state, and it certainly wouldn't be right for us to be asked to, you know, do anything here from a revenue perspective. That's not what we intend to do, and I think our chief executive has been very clear on that as well. You know, we are and intend to get a fully funded scheme, and there is frustration. There's frustration. You probably can hear it in my voice and our members. But I suppose for us in the interim, the most important thing here is our tenants and maintaining the properties that our tenants live in a reasonable state. And that's what we're doing now. If a scheme were to be announced tomorrow, there would be a period of time before we would be able to actually get out there and start physically remediating homes. And that's known and that's understandable. So in the interim, our main aim now is our tenants and trying to look at the houses that are in really poor state and trying to carry out some interim repairs on them.
And then I suppose just to summarise, Donal, then it's 26 homes. They're in three estates. Is it Dún an Éireann? Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Parkmore.
Dún an Éireann and Parkmore and Buncrana, yeah.
And the works are estimated to take around 16 weeks, but contractors now have until the end of the month to submit their tenders applications.
Yes, and I suppose we were probably caught slightly unawares in this. Normally, we put all our tenders out on e-tenders, and that platform is a national platform for contractors to tender for our works, and that's out there for 4 and nearly 5 weeks, and it only went out there last week. We have in train a correspondence to go out now to the tenants and explain what is happening. Now, that doesn't normally happen until 2 or 3 weeks in until we see the appetite of the contractors and the tenders and make sure that there's actually contractors tendering for the work. But now we're going to do that probably a bit quicker than we had intended to do. I think it was one of the local journalists actually who must have registered on e-tenders and found this. Mm-hmm. But that's we'll engage directly now with our tenants and we'll fully inform them what we intend to do and we'll work with them.
That was Donal Walker there, Assistant Engineer of Housing Capital with Donegal County Council. Donal Kavanagh has news and obituaries after these. Hi, it's the second hour of the Greg Hughes Show with Donna Marie Doherty. And today, a few of your comments I want to get to. Some of them have come in on the stream in relation to the road safety. It says, what about continental drivers with no proper insurance license or MOT? And another one saying that speed is the key factor in road deaths, which Debbie had alluded to, that, you know, people need to be accountable and recognise that we've all probably done things that we should not have done and to just make sure that we make an effort to not do them again. This one on in relation to the case of the lady in Kerry who was murdered. What's going on with the Irish media? A woman mother was killed in Kerry and they don't put a photo of the man wanted in connection because he's a refugee. It's very clear at this stage we're putting women and children in danger by letting immigrants who are not vetted into this country. How many times does it have to happen before there's some kind of action taken? Now, it's my understanding that a photo cannot be published because at this moment in time, he is a suspect. And suppose a photo was circulated of him that could absolutely disrupt the course of justice in terms of a trial and stuff. If there is to be known like a bias out there already that would sway a jury, that means they cannot participate in it, in the trial in a way that they have to be able to. And if that's circulated on national media, it would eradicate an awful lot of people. So it would. Another one, bonfires in Northern Ireland. Good morning. Some weeks ago, you had a man on your show telling us that the recent egregious violence from the Union Loyalist areas were due to those communities feeling left behind or marginalised, when everyone else knows that it's just plain hatred, bigotry, xenophobia and sectarianism. This was reinforced last night with the placing of a replica mosque on a bonfire. I didn't see that. I did not see that. Now, granted, I was an absolute nightmare. I was travelling home from Dublin. I will fill these in at some point during the show. We got broken down inside the M1. But the replica of a mosque on a bonfire, indeed, that is quite problematic because that is a very large group of people who are being portrayed through that. Okay, on line one, I have Jacopo Villani, who is a HSE Regional Patient and Service Users Lead. Good morning, how are you?
Good morning, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. Now, we're on today because the HSE is inviting people to join a new service users panel. So what is this or what does that mean?
So Yes. So first of all, my name is Jacopo, and I am originally from Italy, and I've lived for the last 11 years in Galway, and I joined the HSC in 2018, and last year I was appointed as patient and service user lead. So the idea of my post is, which is a new post, is to ensure that members of the public, patients and service users have a voice in the way the HSC is managed. So it's about democratizing services by bringing the lived experience of people using the services to the decision-making table. So I've been working in the last few months with different HSC staff and members of the public to create this recruitment campaign, which we are launching today, to create a council, a regional council of service users, patients, carer. So the idea is that this council, which is made of people, members of the public, will be an advisor to the regional executive officer, so an advisor to the highest management level within the region. So this is about democratizing the services, mm-hmm. ensuring that members of the public are real partners in decision making, so that the public can really have a say in the way the HSC is managed. So it's a way to improve the services by bringing the voices of people who are using the services, which is their right. So people have the right to have a say in the way the HSC is managed.
Jacobo, is this open to absolutely everyone? Is there a criteria to be on the panel, or how does that work?
So actually we have two opportunities. One is a council. So the council is a strategic group. So members of the council will be restricted to 20 people approximately, and so people to join the council, people will be selected. So there are specific criteria such as motivation and commitment to improve the services, experience and insight of different care groups as a service user, family members, but also an understanding of partnership working and some, you know, good communication interpersonal skills. And the council will have a strategic function, a big picture strategic level. The focus is, you know, is strategic, while the panel is a wider network of people, and this is more flexible, so people can join different initiative projects and different working groups, but both positions are voluntary, and people just join the panel, so there isn't any criteria to join the panels, but the council will, people from the council will be selected, but also there will be also some representation criteria, so we want the council to be as representative as possible of different communities. So, for example, we would like to have representation from Seldomer groups, members of the traveling community, ethnic minorities, people also who are experiencing homelessness, social inclusion. So we want the council to be as representative as possible. Also, the geographical spread and the gender balance is important.
I suppose people may hear this and they'd be interested, but they'll be wondering what is the commitment like for it. You know, you're saying there that people who are caring for loved ones will have a really good input into this, but they won't want to have to commit to something that's going to take up an awful lot of time because they are already quite under pressure.
Yes. So for the council, there is a commitment of approximately 4 or 6 hours per month to prepare for meetings and to join meetings every couple of months. So the commitment for the council is a bit more regular. But for the panel, it's really flexible and optional. So people can, you know, there will be expression of interest spread and disseminated among panel members to see if anybody's interested. And people can just, you know, volunteer, raise their hand and join if they want, you know, to join a project or to be part of a committee or a working group to improve the services. So the panel is more flexible, and the focus is put on specific projects and topics.
Excellent. And people who are looking and they think that they'd like to learn a bit more about this, where can they apply or express their interest for it?
So there is a website that we created. So if people Google patient and service user partnership, HSC West Northwest, a website will pop up with more information and a link. But also they can write me an email at partnership.westnorthwest at hsc.ie, and I can, you know, I can give more information. And if people need support to fill the form, I can also link with them. We can talk over the phone, and I can help them to fill the form.
Okay, that is it. Yeah,
and we're yeah, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say that we're welcoming, you know, we're welcoming application from anybody, from different communities and different backgrounds.
Okay, perfect. Yakwing Vilani, that is the HSE Regional Patient and Service Users Lead. Thank you very much for your time this morning, and we will also we will share more details on that on our social media. Okay, it's 20 past 10 and I am joined in studio by Grace Toland and Lorna McLaughlin about the Errigal Arts Festival. Good morning, ladies. How are you doing?
Hi. How are you doing?
Very good, very good. I always love having people in studio. But before we come, and we have some live music and everything in store for you, we're going to talk to Paul Brown, who is the CEO and Artistic Director of the Errigal Arts Festival. Paul, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donna Marie. How are you?
I'm all good. I'm looking forward to this conversation. I love a bit of the arts myself, so I do. So you are getting ready to rock tomorrow, I believe, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly hotting up. We have an exhibition opening this evening at the Donegal County Museum of Rockwell Kent's work, and that's free. That's at 7 o'clock this evening, so if anybody wants to go along to that. And then on Friday, we have our opening concert, which is by the World Music Award winner, Noura Min Somali. So if anybody's a fan of West African blues, they should make it along to that. That's at the Regional Cultural Centre tomorrow evening at 8 o'clock. So, yeah, it's all hotting up, literally, at the minute.
And there is an absolute plethora of events that are going to be happening now over the next 2 weeks. I suppose maybe just at a glance, what can you give us a little taste of? Maybe some of the different experiences that are open.
Yeah, we'll say we're operating right across the county from Mallon and Kildare right through Letterkenny, Rathmullen out to the islands, Gola, Aramore and Tory. And this weekend's our busiest weekend. We have a fantastic Spanish piece coming. It's a comedy piece outdoor at Lifford Old Courthouse on Saturday and Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Anybody's a fan of slapstick comedy, it's a pretty raucous show. It's called Los Galindos MDR, Death by Laughter. So that's taking place outdoor at Lifford on Saturday evening and Sunday evening this weekend as well. We have a brilliant piece which got 5-star review in The Guardian by Alice Shahada, who's a Palestinian artist. It's a solo show called The Horse of Janine. That's happening at the Regional Culture Centre on Saturday evening as well, too. It's a one-man stand-up show. So, as I say, it's a very busy weekend. We have a lot on from the Finn Valley Men's Choir, also at the Baller in Balda Fay. Then we have a three pieces of work on Gold Island on Monday. And then next weekend to the concerts again, we have Gweno, a Mercury Prize nominee from Wales, and that's at the Regional Cultural Centre on Tuesday the 14th at 8 o'clock. Also that night, NEK is performing as part of the Tractor and Owen series down in Dunluce. And then into next week, Ruth McGinley is at the Regional Cultural Centre. We have a brilliant installation piece by Luke Casserly, again, which got great reviews in The Guardian as well, too. And then a very special event on Aramore with Pierce O'Lorcan and a number of different performers, including the Cranog, and that's on Aramore at the shorefront. So you can see that the breadth of the programme, obviously, through our website there, if anyone wants to check it out as we move into the second week. It's at eaf.ie. A big literary weekend in Rathmullen over the 18th and 19th. And a showcase up in the Glories with George Houston, Neil Burns and Marty Smith on the 17th as well. And obviously the Sound in the Peninsula concert at Letterkenny and Anne Green Theatre on Saturday 18th as well.
And there's a big emphasis on community-led and accessible celebrations, so wanting to make sure that there's a space for everybody in the festival.
Very much so. I mean, festival's about bringing people together, but it's also important that we try and reach out to as many people as possible across the county. So we have various events that are community engagement events. Samuel Yakura is a spoken word artist, and he's doing a poetry slam with people from across Donegal, which will lead to a competitive performance at the end of the festival on the 24th. And then he's doing a walk as well too, with Ubuntu Trekkers based out of Dublin, that's out of Glen Bay, but that event's actually sold out. So many other different events as well too, you know, are designed with community, you know, at heart. That's why we have, you know, events ranging from, you know, East Donegal to West, North and South, working towards, you know, our closing weekend in Donegal Town. So, yeah, it is about reaching out to as many people across the county. And so many of the events are free as well, too. We have a fantastic visual arts program by our partner galleries and gallery in West Donegal, the Regional Culture Centre in Letterkenny, the Glebe, out in Garden. So it's really, really varied. And those events are free as well, too. So we want to provide a program that's accessible as possible.
There is, and just as you had mentioned there, and I can see on the program that some of the items are sold out already, and others are selling quite quickly.
Yeah, that's very much so. You know, say we've had a workshop program. A lot of that is already sold out. And again, so we advise people is to look through the program and buy their tickets in advance, because they say there's no guarantee that there'll be tickets available on the night. But yeah, it's great to have, you know, so many different partners across the county, and that enables the festival was always built on that partnership model, working with other arts organisations, community organisations to bring the festival out to people's doorsteps. So it's important. It's important that we celebrate that. It's also important that we celebrate all the people who contribute to the festival, including our great volunteers who give their time so freely, and to our voluntary board of directors as well too. So it's a collective effort. You know, the staff do great work, work incredibly hard to pull this all together. You know, it's the only festival in Ireland which covers such a big geographic area in terms of right across the county. So we're delighted we're able to get this to this 39th year, and say opening tonight at the Donegal County Museum.
It looks fantastic. Now, this is the 39th year. I can only eagerly anticipate what's going to be coming for the 40th, Paul. Thank you very much. I'll let you go, and I'll get talking to the two ladies that are here in front of me now. I have Lorna McLaughlin of the Henry Girls, and the director of the Inishowen Trad Choir, and Grace Toland, director of the Inishowen Traditional Singer Circle. How are we keeping? How are we doing today?
We're doing good.
All very excited.
Absolutely. I'm really excited to be part of Airigal Arts Festival. I mean, it's great to see that we're going to be part of this this project's part of the whole countywide event.
It is. And I always find with things like this, it's the people who make it, and looking at the list of performers alone, it's monumental. So it is.
It really is. I think, for being from Inishowen, it's great to see yourself as part of the whole Donegal programme.
Grace, what we'll do is, if you give us a little taster of what's to come, just pull that mic down in front of you a little bit more and make sure that we can hear you perfectly. Yeah, grand. And what we'll do then is, Grace, you're going to do a bit of unaccompanied singing, and then we'll have a chat after about each of the performances that you are involved in. So, Grace, whenever you're ready, you go for it.
Great. So I'm just going to delve into Inishowen's great song heritage from our archive of singers, and it's a song called The Factory Girl. As I went out walking one fine summer's morning, the birds in the bushes did warble and sing. Gay lads and gay lassies in couples were sporting, going down to yon factory their work to begin. I spied one among them more fairer than any, Her cheeks like the red rose that none could excel. Her skin like the lily that grows in yon valley. Aye, and she was a hard-working factory girl. I stepped up beside her, more closely to view her. But on me she cast such a look of disdain, saying, a young man, have manners and do not come near me. For although I'm a poor girl, I think it no shame.
Brilliant, Grace. God, isn't Irish music just, it just sucks you in, doesn't it?
It really does. Kind of,
you know,
yeah.
The storytelling in it, and you with singing The Unaccompanied, it's just, you can just feel everything, you know?
Well, that's it. And I think we are so lucky in Inishowen that we have this amazing tradition of singing unaccompanied on our own. Great tradition that goes back through the generations of families, individuals who've kept singing going in the peninsula. And what we're still able to do is tap into that. And that's what the choir's doing.
And it is. And it's a way of storytelling. Lorna, you're, of course, everyone will know you from the Henry Girls, but as well, you're the director of the Inishowen Trad Choir, and you're performing with both throughout the festival.
That's correct, yeah. I'm the director now. I've been the director for the last 3 years, I guess, the musical director.
Yes.
And it really sits me. I'm a proud Inishowen woman. I'm not really from the traditional singing background, but it's been a great way to learn about the archive and learn about all the great singers that have been on the peninsula. So it really kind of ties in with the work that myself and my sisters, Karen and Joling, have been doing over the years, just as musicians in the community. And we always love performing together, but we love doing outreach work, working with different groups and all. So this is just perfect for me, because I'm a big fan of singing clearly and harmonies, and these songs now have been traditionally they would be sung by solo singers, but for the choir purposes we have it in the sort of the traditional or the standard choir format: soprano, alto, tenor, and bass.
Yes.
Which isn't necessarily in the traditional realm, but it kind of works really well. And we have a brilliant arranger called Neil Burns from Downpatrick, who he now lives in Derry, and he's arranged, oh, I don't know, over
about 6 or 7 songs for the choir.
And it's just really brought the songs to life. It really sort of highlights, you know, the emotion of the song as well, the way he's arranged them. So we've got a great group. It's absolutely brilliant. There's over 40 members in the choir now, and they come from all over the peninsula and even as far as Derry. They come down. So we're really enjoying it. It's a lot of fun as well. Like a big
it's
emphasis fun. On fun.
And it's fun, but it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah.
You know, and but it's not like, oh, this is such hard work. Whenever people are committed to doing that, it's pure passion.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just, and that's very obvious, and you can see even now in the lead up to performance, you can see everybody's really giving it 100%, and you know, it's just a lovely thing to be part of, and it really ties in with other work that's going on in the peninsula, with like the Inishowen Traditional Music Project are doing amazing work to kind of keep the tunes alive, and the lots of the songs in that archive as well.
Yeah, I think one of the great things about the choir is that it's introduced a lot of people that maybe thought traditional singing, maybe that's not for me, or the songs are very long and they're very dreary.
that would have been me.
But when you're part of the choir, I think that it's opened up the sort of the song tradition in Inishowen to a whole new group of people.
Yeah.
And we're finding more, because the Singer's Circle has a full year-long programme of events, sessions and a festival. And we're finding that the choir members are now coming to all the other events.
That's it. Whenever, with choirs in particular, because they're so big, they'll have little pockets of people who'll be like, oh, come on, we'll go give it a go. And maybe 2 or 3 friends will go together. It creates a network, so it does. Very much so.
Mm. It's a community, and it's the like I always say, the thing that I love the most is the friendships and the kind of the emphasis that we put on just getting time to just chat to as well and have and get to know people.
Yeah,
you know, it's really about social inclusion as well. And
surely it's so, like, we all know the older you get, the harder it is to meet people and to make friends and to fight loneliness. Yeah.
And I think it's lovely that we do have an intergenerational choir. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So it's a great mix of
the
ages.
Range?
Well, I'd say the ages are, I don't want to be putting people on the spot. Let's say there's people in their 20s, their 30s, and then there are people older than that. Let me just put it that way.
Fair
enough. So, and it's a great mix. We are so blessed. We have a great mix of men and women in our choir, which is really, you know, it's quite good to have a really balanced choir of men and women.
Yeah.
So I think Lorna's right. This is more about a community of singers rather than a choir. And that's fabulous. And Sound in the Peninsula has just given us the platform.
Yeah.
And you know what, just you mentioned there that the songs are usually solo artists. The songs are usually sang as solos.
Yeah.
But whenever you have a wall of sound of that many voices, you could have heard the song 100 times and it all sounds sort of
different. Yeah. I mean, there's literally sometimes during the choir practice where I'm like tears are coming into my eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Or, you know, goosebumps. It's so powerful.
Yeah.
It really is.
And I think I have to, if Lorna would just say a wee bit about how she get, like, a lot of, I read music a wee bit, but this isn't a choir about reading music or anything like that. It is about, Lorna gives us all sorts of ways that we can learn recordings. She's working with us all the time. So it's not about that, a very formal approach. But you would say, Lorna, she makes us work hard in a nice way.
I do. Well, I suppose I have high standards for the choir. I think, you know, I always love the idea that, you know, we're in a rural community, but we can just...
Yeah.
You know, we can punch above our weight totally, and why not? You know, if you give people the right resources and make it as accessible as possible, of course they can. Sure, everybody can sing it. I think there's too much of a hierarchy in music sometimes.
Yeah.
I think that people think there's good musicians and then there's people who kind of, I don't see it like that. I think it's just about deciding that you're going to give it a go and then get into it. And, you know, there's amazing singers all over the place. And, you know, we're very lucky. A lot of them have stepped through the door on a Tuesday night here.
In the Colgan Hall.
Yeah.
Fantastic. And, you know, music, it is for everyone. The arts is for everyone. A lot of people think that it's not for them, but that is the beauty of something like the Errigal Arts Festival.
Absolutely.
Where everyone's welcome. Grace, you are also going to be singing along with Rita Gallagher, or you have.
I think the format of the concert is that we, and as well as the choir, so we've been working away in the background and we picked out a programme of songs, but what we decided to do was, why don't we invite some solo singers from, you know, some really big names in traditional singing to come and join us, and we are going to be the sort of we're going to be their backing singers for the night. So Rita Gallagher from Killigordon, who's a T.G. Cahir Singer of the Year, is being joined by Niall Hanna from Tyrone, another T.G. Cahir Singer of the Year, and also Nelny Cronin from West Cork, who is also a T.G. Cahir Singer of the Year. And our own representative of the song tradition in Ashone is Kevin McGonigal, who comes from a sort of a dynasty of singers, the James Ons in Clinch and in Ashone. So the four singers, this is what we've done is arranged for the four singers to sing an Inishone song, arranged especially for them and the choir. So it's a really, really special night, and, you know, of the celebration of Inishone songs and singers. And we were really lucky to get some other arrangers as well as Neil Burns. So we've brought in, there was a fabulous group called the Voice Squad, which was the big harmony group in Ireland for years of traditional singing. Their arranger, Jerry Cullen, arranged one of the has arranged Rita's song, The Dark-Eyed Sailor. And we've also brought in Ruth Clinton from the four-part women's band Landless. They've also arranged for us. And Jolene, one of the Henry Gael, Jolene McLaughlin, has also arranged. So it's not just one sound through the night at all.
No.
It's a whole mixture of individual voices. We're also doing a lovely feature on the singer John Donovan, who was from Malin Head, who died very early. And he was only 35 when he died in 1949, but he made three gramophone records in 1945.
Wow.
We are going to be singing two John Donovan songs on the night, and one of them is going to feature Kate Crossan from Derry. So it's like, it's such a wonderful celebration of everything that's good about any show and singing.
Excellent, and we look forward to it. We have a clip here of Rita, which we'll play out with in just a little moment. But no, I think we have, is there everything we have all, or is there anything that we've missed?
Guess just make sure everyone gets the final thing is just if anybody wants to come and see the show, we're going to be in Angreden Theatre on the 18th of July, Saturday.
Excellent.
It's at 8 o'clock, and if they want to book tickets, they can call the box office 07491 20777. That's Angreden box office. And then also they're available at angreening.com, and there's tickets there. There probably will be tickets available on the door as well. You know, it's a big theatre, but the tickets are selling now, so it would be advised to book.
Yeah. The good seats are going.
Perfect then. Thank you so much. That is Lorna McLaughlin of the Henrikers and director of the Inishowen Trad Choir, and Grace Toland, also director of the Inishowen Traditional Singers Circle. And that's all about the Errigal Arts Festival, and we'll have more information on that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
Here
thanks,
now is a piece of Rita Gallagher singing Dark Eyed Sailor, which you can catch on the night.
Then half the ring did young Willie show. She seemed distracted between joy and woe. Sing your welcome, Willie, I have gold in store for my dark-eyed sailor. For my dark-eyed sailor, a maid I'd live and die. So now this couple does well agree. They live in a
last 15 minutes of the show. Now I have Emma on the line. And Emma, you have seen a bit of fly tipping. There was a dumped there at the side of the road. Where were you that you'd seen this?
Hi, Donna. No, it wasn't on the side of the road. It's actually down in the car park behind Domino's in down Lower Main Street. It's just, well, after the rally weekend, all that stuff there, I sent in the photograph of the first photo, that was all left and dumped in kind of like wasteland. It's kind of like, you know where the planning permission for the new hotel is going to be down Lower Main Street? It's kind of the back of there. And just over time, people have been like going through it, and I suppose animals and stuff. And it's actually like, I don't even know how many bottles. It's bottles of like helium balloons that people were using. And just like, it's just an awful mess. Like, I don't know who would be responsible for cleaning it up. But I just think like the people come to the rally, like they're not coming, you know, they're not bringing anything to the town, but they're leaving all their mess behind for somebody else to clean, you know?
Yeah, no, there'll be people saying that they'll bring lots of business and money and whatever, but I suppose that's not the point that's being made here, is that, I take it, Emma, you're not into the rally?
No, I am into the rally, and I think the people that actually go and watch the rally are the proper, like, rally fans, but I think the people, some of the people that come to Letterkenny, I think it's just an opportunity to drink, do whatever illegal substances and getting high and stuff that they like to do, and but just leave their mess then behind in the town. And I've noticed, like, I don't know, like I get out of the town, like when the rally's on, I'm down Lower Main Street just from across from McDonald's, and like noise level rubbish is just unbearable, like, and then you come back and you find all this rubbish just dumped on your front door, like it's not nice.
There's now, I'm looking, mm-hmm. there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of these. Is this like the helium canisters? They look like a bottle of hairspray
more.
Or something.
Yeah, and like, see yesterday, like in that heat, like that could have exploded. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, nobody knows, and like, there's a crash, you know, just across the road from that. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's just, I suppose the ignorance of it, just to dump all that and bring that here and just dump it. Like, you know, would they do it in their own county or their own towns or whatever? But it's just sad too. It's sad to see Letterkenny get as dirty as what it is. And like, there's, you do see people out on a Sunday trying to pick up litter and stuff, but I just don't know if there's enough to being done, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, that's unusual rubbish, I suppose, in the sense, like, I've never seen anything like that before. I don't know.
There can be, I suppose, assumptions made about what was being done to leave that there. And there's enough bins around, I suppose, you know, especially on Main Street. Yeah. You know, there was definitely many different options.
But these people, they went out of their way to, like, you know, like, dump it in a kind of a concealed area, if you know what I mean, you know, so, like, they knew what they were doing. So, and I know, like, it's not going to change the fact that it's done, but I just thought this is a bit silly and a bit dangerous too, like, you know what I mean? And, like, clearly people have gone through it and... I don't know what they're looking to find. Like, it's rubbish, but it's just a hateful thing to see. Like,
it is, and you know what? There's a lot to be said about manners and the lack of them.
Yeah. Like, I've lived on the Port Road during rally weekend, and like, people having their hanging baskets and flowers and things pulled down, and it's just about having, I suppose, a bit of manners and respect for the town that you're going to, and not leaving all your rubbish and stuff behind.
Well, Emma, thank you very much for calling in about that and sharing. Now, I had a bit of trouble getting the image up there, but we'll have it up on our we'll get it up on our social media, and we'll clip the interview there with it so that people who are listening can get a look. Emma, thank you very much for that. We'll have that up shortly. If you want to see, and if you have any thoughts on it, be sure to leave a comment, and I'm sure Greg will be more than happy to get your thoughts on that tomorrow. Now, up next is Chris Ashmore. Chris, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Business, I'm very well. Yes. All is good.
Good. The weather is, they say, the sun's shining. I feel like it might come back shortly. It still looks a little bit dull out there. How is it?
Bit dull, but a bit disappointing after yesterday being so good.
Yeah. Chris, what is on the agenda this week for Business Matters?
Yes, two people. First up, I have been speaking to Connor Cummings about his new business venture, which is called Swilly Boat Tours. He runs a variety of sightseeing trips around the spectacular coastline of Lough Swilly, doing both public and private tours, and they take in many of the beaches and indeed caves around Lough Swilly. And you can see the sites of Fanad Lighthouse, Fort Dunree, the Pollet Sea Arch, and lots more. And we've a clip here about his business, which he talks about it, and also about the boat that he uses as well.
You know, I've explored both sides of the Swilly over most of my life, and there's some beautiful sights to see from the land. But when you're in a boat, and especially a rib, it allows you to get into all these nooks and crannies that the larger fibreglass boats just can't get into. But I was just saying there about Knockalla, you know, you drive over Knockalla and you head down Ballymastocker View and point and head into Port Salon, and you look out and you think, wow, this is beautiful. But you don't know what's underneath your feet. I mean, some of the caves in there, they're breathtaking, and I go into them probably twice a day. And every time I go into them, I'm still... wow, this is amazing. It's something you could never get sick of. So, it's one of the main reasons why I started this. I want to get people to see our coastline from the sea. It's actually quite a famous boat, so it was used to fill in the Game of Thrones up on the north coast. And it's also had Morgan Freeman on board and a few other celebrities. So there's been a few famous people sitting on the sea you're sitting on, Chris.
Oh, Okay, Connor, name dropping, Morgan Freeman.
Yeah, sounds impressive. And the boat itself, wonderful boat. There's a cover over the top. You can put down the sides if need be, so you can protect yourself from the sun or from the rain. And if the conditions are calm, you know, he can get right in close beside some of the caves. Wow. And as he said there in that clip, you know, people might be aware of the scenery looking from the road out to the sea, but it's a totally different perspective when you're looking at it from the sea up at the coastline. So I think there'll be big interest, and his feedback is, so far, it's been very, very encouraging for him.
What I really liked about that clip, actually, was you could hear how excited Connor was. So you can imagine if he was giving you a tour, he'd just be like so happy to be there, which makes such a difference.
Absolutely. Great enthusiasm. He knows the coastline well. He also, for many years, has been going boats off West Donegal as well. So he's really on top of his game, and has plans indeed maybe for a second boat in the future. So watch this space.
Fantastic. Now, sticking with the realm of tourism, you've also been talking to Brian Gallagher.
Yes, Brian Gallagher is the acting chair of Letterkenny Tourism, and he joined me to explain the thinking behind a new website that was launched recently, Go Visit Letterkenny. .ie. It's basically highlighting all that the town has to offer and how it can be a great base to explore the county. And I think we have a clip here from him, and he sort of tells a little bit more about why they have developed it.
We decided that we need a platform now to push the positives of the town going forward. And I suppose top of the agenda was when we looked at other tourism destinations, major towns relating to tourism, we'll say Westport, Killarney, Kilkenny, they all had a flagship website, and Letterkenny never had a website, like a platform that showed all that the town had to offer. So with the help of Donegal County Council, Tourism, Donegal Tourism and Fáilte Ireland, with their help and the help of all our members, we put a flyer out to members, anybody that would want to get involved, and we got a great response. And a year down the line, we recently launched the Go Visit Letterkenny website.
How long is the website up and running now, Chris?
Well, it was only launched there several weeks ago. It's getting more and more information all the time. There's lots of things on it, you know, places to eat, activities. There's also five things to do in Donegal, so it's bringing in the whole county as well. And they're actively encouraging more people to get involved, because the more that's on it, the better it is for visitors. And as he pointed out in the clip, look, so many people now, when you go somewhere, especially for the first time, you do tend to go online to try and find out about the area that you're going to. So this brings together lots and lots of things in this in the Letterkenny area, and gives people, you know, all sorts of ideas. And one of the points he was also making, you know, there's things on our own doorstep, and sometimes tourists come and visit and we mightn't even be aware of them, like a walking trail in Letterkenny and a lot of the heritage side of things, that when you go onto the website, there's always going to be something there that maybe you didn't know existed. So it's lots of information.
Especially with the sunshine now, to make the most of it. You know, you don't need to be going too far away. In other business news, we have some housing plans for Castlefin. What are we looking for?
Yeah,
here?
Just always good to keep an eye on the planning applications that are going into Donegal County Council. So Happen Tech Housing Association, it's seeking planning permission for 34 housing units on the Rafoe Road in Castlefin. So when you go out and about now, you can just see there is a lot more houses going up. So that's good to see. And I just wanted to highlight also, applications are open for, it's an outdoor recreation infrastructure scheme. Now, it's funded by the Department of Rural and Community Development and the Gaeltacht. And there's funding between 40,000 and 200,000 euro available. So this is ideal for community groups or people who want to develop maybe a little trail in their area. You can contact the Donegal Local Development Company on that. So the funding is quite significant.
That is. You also have in here about Premier League clubs in England are far from a cash cow. Before we jump into this, I was thinking about doing the show tomorrow, and we were driving back, and me and my friends, we would not be very football people, but with the World Cup, you know, everyone's jumping in.
Erling Haaland is just, he is on every single girl's my age, like for you page on TikTok. So he's taken over.
And he's just such a cool sort of character, and he stands and he smiles, and you know, a lot of people, when you follow him, he can do not very much for a lot of a game, and then suddenly, as happened the other night, bang bang, and he gets the goals. Talk about being in the right place at the right time. He really is an incredible player, and Norway have a decent chance because when you have somebody like him up front, you can never rule out that he's going to score. The reason I mentioned just the football, there's a review that comes out every year. It's the annual review of football finance by Deloitte. And, you know, people think, you know, all that you hear, your Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea, etc., and these big clubs, and they must be making millions. Well, that actually isn't the case. That between them for the 2024-25 season, they actually lost £948 million between them. So there's not that many of them that are actually making a profit because there's huge transfer fees, and a lot of big names have come in but not gone out. And in the Championship, which is the second tier in Britain, only three clubs there managed to report a profit. So a lot of money in the game, but some of the clubs have an awful lot of debt as well.
Okay. Mm. Well, Chris, thank you very much. That's Chris Ashmore, presenter of Business Matters. That's on after the
6 o'clock news on Sunday.
So 7 o'clock news, I should know this. Yeah. Chris, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Time has well and truly caught up with us here. Greg's back in tomorrow. So until then, take care.